Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. It is hot. It's like, I'm just realizing it's warm in my apartment. It's like 75 degrees out. We're New Year's is only a few days away. It's been freezing lately. I think I'm getting sick, so Harrison, you're going to have to carry us through this one. Are you ready for that?
No.
All right, so let's go ahead. We'll see how this podcast goes. Basically, we have a couple topics just to kind of keep everybody up to date who listens to the show. We had a show yesterday with James Hollis of Beat Ball Breakdown, and for those of you who follow him on Twitter, he's Naughty Drippin', or was Naughty Drippin'.
Did you guys meet to record the show in Temecula, or?
We thought about it, but it was kind of a drive for both of us, so.
Oh, okay.
You know, there's this technology out there with Skype. I know I've been making you to, you know, drive up to my house every day for these shows, but there is a technology out there that makes it easier for us.
Well, we're going to have a discussion about this off the air.
So basically, James and I talked about basically everything in the NBA. We just kind of turned on the microphone and went and didn't really talk much about the Lakers' current events at all, hardly. So we
got to catch up on that today.
Yeah, so we figured we'd catch everybody up on that. But before we do that, make sure you're following the show at Audio Boom, iTunes, Silver Screen and Roll, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Today's Fast Break. Today's show is brought to you by the sun, which is really hot right now. I didn't mean to go there, but make sure you use the promo codes LO Lakers on SeatGeek and Mac Weldon, and Lakers10 on BetTheSI.com. As you heard him a couple times already, Harrison is here with me. Harrison was in Utah last night, but
I was watching the game against Utah last night. It was in Los Angeles.
You didn't fly out to Utah for that?
No, believe it or not, I'm not. Silver Screen and Roll does not pay you to fly me to Utah.
Which would have been funny if they'd have flown you to Utah for a game that wasn't taking place out there.
That would have been quite the mishap.
So... this morning, though, Ramona Shelburne and Mark Stein of ESPN reported that the Lakers...
Seamless transition.
Yes. The Lakers worked out Donatas Moniunis, or Demo, for the rest of the show, because that's a mouthful. But they worked out Demo because Larry Nance Jr. is out. Tarik Black is still out. And frankly, Demo is an NBA player, and they have a couple guys at the end of their roster who are not. Meaning Marcelo Huertas and Meta World Peace. Harrison, they would have to waive one of those guys if they want to sign Demo. How would you feel about that move, and what was your initial thought as soon as the rumor came up, or the news actually came up that they actually worked him out?
Yeah, it's not really it's reputable news, so we'll take it at this point. It's something to actually talk about. And as far as – so you want me to figure out which one of those guys I would cut if they were going to add? Or how do I feel?
That's a good way to start the conversation.
Yeah, I mean, if they were going to add Moniunis, I think as little as World Peace is bringing to the roster on the court, I would almost go with Huertas because I feel like he's not bringing much more. And I don't know that he necessarily is as much of a leader in the locker room. I guess I don't know that for sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, neither guy. The Lakers, at this point, they aren't going to miss either guy on the court. And as you noted, Monte Yunus is, he has some faults. He's not, as, in my opinion, I don't think he's quite as good as a lot of people seem to think he is, but he's better than either of those guys. And he's a real bona fide NBA rotation player. And especially when the Lakers are kind of lacking a little bit in front court depth like they are right now, or they're hurting in that area, then I think that he's someone who would be able to help them at least a little bit, but maybe not necessarily in the ways that people expect. What do you think that Monte Yunus would bring if the Lakers brought him in?
Well, I wanted to just quickly add or piggyback on the point you made about Huertas and Metta World Peace.
Okay.
It says something that Jose Calderon is out, and would you...
It says something that I forgot about Jose Calderon.
Yeah.
Who also is not bringing much and probably isn't a waiver candidate because he's making so much, but he's another guy that isn't bringing very much.
But it says something that Jose Calderon... Is Calderon even healthy right now?
No, he's not. He's injured.
That's what I thought. Yeah, so it says something that Calderon is injured, and one would think that the, you know, Huerta slipping into the rotation would be fairly seamless, and yet the Lakers aren't going there. Right. So like if there was a time that Huertas would actually get meaningful minutes and considerable or something close to considerable by his standards minutes, it would be now, and he still isn't. Right?
To be fair, though, Calderon was only really playing because Russell was out and Luke didn't want to break up that bench unit.
Yeah.
And otherwise, Calderon wasn't playing either. I'm not arguing for Huertas' spot on the roster. I'm just saying I don't know that he would be playing right now either way because Calderon wasn't playing. It's not like he has to slot in for Calderon when Russell is back because Calderon was only playing because Russell was out.
So, I mean, to put all that into perspective then, there is duplication at a position that the Lakers weren't using anyway.
Yes. That's an accurate way to put it. They have two guys that do the same thing, and neither of them were playing.
Exactly. So get rid of one of those guys, and you bring in Demo is kind of the way I would go with this. And that's even with me being Metta World Peace. Like, I think I'm far and away Metta World Peace's harshest critic this year. And even
you're the opposite of a stan. You're the opposite of, like, a gigantic, dedicated fan. You're a gigantic, dedicated hater.
I am. I am Phil Hater. I think that's a guy's name, but... I Huerta seems like a nice guy. He wore that elf costume.
He is a nice guy.
Yeah,
the elf costume was amazing. That was hilarious.
Yeah, and he juggled a soccer ball, right, with the elf costume on.
He wore an elf costume to the Lakers Christmas Day game and juggled a soccer ball in the middle of the locker room. So, or it was a basketball that he was juggling on his feet. I don't remember. It's funny how memory works, and you said soccer ball, so now I'm remembering a soccer ball.
Yep.
But it might have been a basketball. It really doesn't matter. He brought some he did bring some levity to the locker room. He seems like a really good guy. Everybody likes him, but at this point the Lakers need guys that can play.
And it says something that the most meaningful thing that sticks out about Marcelo Huerta's season so far would be a highly illegal basketball move, kicking a basketball repeatedly in an elf costume. So I am
fair, that's pretty unforgettable.
I am all for the addition to of Donatas Manayunas or Demo, and
you getting his name right twice is the upset of the podcast.
It really might be. But so in terms of what he would add to the Lakers, and the number one reason the Lakers have not actually added him to their roster yet, it seems, is because they're concerned about the way the rotation would work out with Thomas Robinson, with Larry Nance Jr., with
The report, it was kind of weird. The report said Randall and Tarik Black, and Tarik Black isn't even playing right now.
Yeah.
So I don't know what was up with that. If that was like some type of misconception, I don't know what was going on there. But right now it's Robinson. It would be Robinson and Randall.
Yeah. So I would say that's not enough reason not to sign the guy. I don't understand what their thinking is there, because there's
very
little.
That almost feels like the type of justification where we don't want to cut a guy, so we're just saying that it's because we like the minutes that those guys are giving. And, you know, Randall's been giving great minutes. Randall, I thought, was really good against the Utah Jazz last night, and I thought Robinson might have played his best game yet this season. So those guys were good in their time, but you might need at least one more healthy big, because now you're at the point where if Robinson gets hurt, or if Randall gets hurt, or if Mozgov gets hurt, then some Laker fans are going to be really into this, but Zubats is forced into minutes that he's not necessarily ready for yet.
Yeah, Zubats to me is a non-factor in all of this. I
don't think that he's ready. I think that the Lakers are absolutely right to keep him on the roster because mm-hmm. he's a developmental prospect, and I think that he's shown potential. I just don't think that he's ready to help them play well at all right now. And hey, maybe you don't need to do that. But mm-hmm. if you're not going full on, let's just play the kids, let's develop whoever we need to develop mode, and you want someone that can come in and play, Monta Ellis is more ready for that if his back's healthy.
Yeah, so I would say add him. And in terms of what he would actually bring on the court, it'd be nice to have somebody who can step out and shoot the three consistently from the 4 or 5 position. Right.
Well, so that's the thing, is that there's this conception that he's this three-point shooter, and he's only shot above 35% from three in one of his 4 NBA seasons.
But he's a willing shooter.
He is a willing three-point shooter, so I guess there's something to be said for that. But the other seasons, he shot 28.9, 25, and 28.1. Although he was better, he's shooting around 35% from the corners.
What's the order of those years there?
So his rookie season, he shot 28.9%, sophomore 25%, third year 36.8%, and fourth year 28.1%.
Okay, I would say it's probably somewhere in between the 36 and the 28 over the last couple of years, then closer to 25 from his rookie year or whatever
sophomore
it might be.
Year.
Sophomore year.
But yeah. And I mean, you're probably right. And him being willing to shoot the three, it does mean that he's somewhat of a threat mm-hmm. from there. I just don't think that the primary way that he'd necessarily help the Lakers would be as a three-point shooter.
Yeah, I just mean, so the Lakers fours right now, other than Luol Deng, who has been very good as a four, you know, because that's kind of sort of what he's best at now.
It's kind of his position at this point.
but other than Luol Deng, you kind of look at the Lakers fours. Julius Randle flat out cannot shoot three-pointers, right? Same goes for Tarik Black.
Hey, he hit a three last night against the Jazz, and Staples Center was electric, I'll have you know.
That's good to know. That's a fun story. boy, that was condescending. But the... you know, you look at Thomas Robinson, he can't shoot three-pointers, right? Larry Nance Jr. will shoot a three-pointer if there's 3 seconds left on the shot clock, but other than that...
If there's 3 seconds left on the shot clock, no other NBA players in his vicinity, and all 4 teammates are yelling at him to shoot it.
Yeah, and everybody in the arena, even if they're in way arena.
Yeah, the whole arena, Luke... You know, like every person Larry Nance Jr. like has ever met is there yelling at him to shoot it. Then he'll go ahead and shoot a three.
I could just picture like Larry Nance Jr. You know, you hear something that sounds like booze, but his teammates are like, "No, no, no, no! They're saying shoot.
They're saying shoot." Yes.
So that's what it would take to get Larry Nance Jr. to shoot a 3-pointer, and having a willing shooter, a willing and even somewhat able shooter on an NBA court. Greatly enhances spacing, and I don't think, like, if they signed Demo, it would be to play, what would you say, 15 minutes a game, do you think you would get?
If that, yeah.
Like 10 minutes a game, so I don't, the rotation concerns, while it's cool to see that maybe the Lakers are thinking about this so long term, where they absolutely have to get, make sure that Julius Randle gets enough minutes, Tarik Black gets enough minutes, or whatever. But again, for what Monta Ellis could potentially provide for the Lakers, I just think you have to give that a go. You have to try it out.
It's really not he's not just a shooter. The reason I started talking about there's this misconception that he's a stretch four thing was not just simply to disparage his shooting, although I do think that that's a valid concern. Mm-hmm. I mean, he still is a pretty decent offensive player. He has a nice little post up game when teams try it. When the Rockets would play him at the four or at the five and an undersized player was guarding him, he has a nice little baby hook that he can use. He's a not just a pretty good passer, but he's a flashy passer, it seems to be. Mm-hmm. He was I was watching some film of him, and he could throw no looks, behind the back touch passes. Now, some of those are highlights, and he probably turns it over, I would imagine, on those as well. But the flashy passes are fun to watch. So, I mean, he does have utility offensively.
Yeah, and
even outside of just stretching the floor or being willing to shoot a three-pointer, because, you know, the value of being willing to shoot a three aside, it doesn't help as much if you're not a good three-point shooter. And I don't know if he can't be average as a three-point shooter, which he's only really been one season in his career, then I don't know how much even just the fact that he's willing to shoot, I don't know how much that helps you.
Yeah, and my last point on this is that for the stage in the rebuild that the Lakers are in, Donatas Mataunas provides a heck of a lot more to a rebuild potentially than Marcelo Huertas or Metta World Peace, whoever they decide that they would have to waive when they signed, if and when they signed Mataunas. So,
yeah, if he ends up being good, then he is, how old is he right now? He is,
I guess, 27.
That's, yeah, he's guess. He's 26. He's 26. So he's not young, but he's young enough that he'd be around when this core when this core starts to kind of hit a little bit, mm-hmm. if he was able to stay healthy and if he was able to contribute.
And even if he isn't, you know, necessarily going to be around, if he turns into a player that, you know, if he showcases some skills out there and a team says, oh yeah, this guy can still play, then that's another avenue by which the Lakers could potentially, you know, acquire more assets. And
yeah,
and that's something
too.
That's something. Look, everything that we just said about Mataunas cannot therefore be said, or conversely be said about Metta World Peace and Marcelo Huertas, who, again, I don't have anything against those guys as people. I'm just saying if you're trying to figure out a way to continue this rebuild in the direction it's going, this is an opportunity that the Lakers could potentially put themselves in an even better situation than they have over the last couple of years.
Yeah, and all that being said, I'm not sure that they're going to part with World Peace. Maybe Huertas is a little bit more likely, but I don't think that they're willing to declare an end to World Peace. Mm-hmm. And the one more note that I would make on Mataunas is that a note of caution, I guess, is kind of, two things, I guess. His back was bad enough that the Pistons rescinded that trade for him a year ago. Mm-hmm. And the back injuries for big men are – back injuries for anyone are no joke, but especially for tall guys are no joke. Mm-hmm. And the Rockets have also been better without Mataunas on the floor every single year of his career except for last year by net rating.
Yeah, and again, these are all – I mean, this is a highly – that was a – pretty toxic situation last year, right, out there in Houston. So I don't know if the net rating is as much a concern as the back is. The back is a legitimate concern for big guys. Once the back goes out, that's pretty hard to overcome. We've seen it even with Dwight Howard, right, who when he was acquired, when he came to Los Angeles, he was coming off of back surgery. He didn't look like the same player then, and he thought, okay, well, maybe a couple years removed from that, enough therapy takes place and he turns into something closer to what he was in Orlando, and we just haven't seen that since. And
he's gotten close at times, but consistently no. Yeah, yeah. You're absolutely right. It just saps you.
Yeah, it's I suffer from back stuff, you suffer from back stuff, and we are nowhere near athletes, and these guys have to put so much more strain on their bodies than
hey, man,
you and
people,
I have to.
People you can't just make up a back problem to get out of that video of your Euro stumble from Summer League. You can't just say that you're like, oh no, it's just the back. I'm a shell of my former self.
Oh, you should have seen me back before my back problems. I actually got off the ground. So
I'll believe it when you produce video evidence.
All right. So after the demo stuff last night during, or I guess it was Tuesday night, during the game, we got reports that Phil Jackson and Jeannie Buss have called off their engagement. And I want to say this before we get into actually analyzing the situation. From a person's standpoint, from a personal standpoint, from a human story standpoint, this sucks to hear because I would imagine at some point in their lives, they thought that they were legitimately going to get married, and they saw each other as a future in each other's romantic lives. And to find
I
out,
I think that's generally why you get engaged. Yep, yeah,
that usually is the thought process that goes into there. And it stinks to find out that, you know, that didn't work out the way that they had planned. So for Phil Jackson and for Jeannie Buss, all the love and support, while they deal with probably a pretty major kick to the nuts, like this. I don't know many situations apart from death that resonate, you know, or that can really set people off the way that this does. You know, it's why Nick Young took forever for him to forgive D'Angelo Russell, because he was legitimately engaged. He saw his life going in one direction, and then you find out that all of a sudden it is not going in another in that direction, or it's taking a huge turn for the worse in the moment. And yeah, so for those guys, before we get into analyzing it, what this might mean for the Lakers, what it might mean for the Knicks, what it might mean for Jim Buss, whatever, it absolutely should be stated that what matters exponentially more than all of that stuff is how Jeannie and Phil are doing as they reel from the news. So all the support to those guys. With all
it always breakups, and I've never had a broken engagement with someone I've been with for like 15 plus years, but that kind of stuff sucks.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't even imagine. So we'll seamlessly segue into analyzing the situation. And what was your first thought when you got the news? Because for me, it was, okay, now I'm really interested to see what was going on behind the scenes. Anytime Phil was linked to LA, I wonder if that almost put a tax on the relationship. Because how many times can you, like, it already sucks to have to tell people that, or, you know, it already sucks that you have to be 3,000 miles away from your fiance, but then to constantly have to remind people that that fiance isn't going to come, that can't be a good feeling for the relationship. That can't be a good thing for the relationship. So that was where my mind immediately jumped to, of like, yeah, that situation must have really sucked for everybody involved.
My first thing was, why are they tweeting about this? And yeah, I'm after that, I was surprised by how many media outlets were covering it, because at first people were almost treating it like a celebrity gossip story. But I think more so than just the relationship side of it, the thing that's bigger or more meaningful for the Lakers, at least, and for Lakers fans and Lakers coverage, is exactly what you referenced, how this kind of impacts the Jim Buss deadline, how it impacts the Phil to LA rumors, which I think it's probably fair to say are dead at this point, mm-hmm. at least for now. And
I can't imagine they're coming back anytime soon.
We'll see, man. I never say never with any story surrounding this franchise anymore.
That's probably fair. But like, if Phil Jackson never made it back to LA while he was engaged to Jeannie Buss, I don't think he's going to make it to LA without being engaged to Jeannie Buss.
I mean, but there's nothing to stop them from getting re-engaged. I mean, we're getting into speculation now, but I'm just, you know, and so there was that, and then I think it impacts this deadline, and I think that those rumors are dead, and I think that that's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And this coming on the heels of Jim Buss talking about the deadline the way he was, right, that also adds another level to this of I wonder if Jim Buss's statements, I definitely don't think it had a direct impact on the relationship itself.
Well,
but I do.
Ramona
wonder...
Shelburne wrote a story this morning about kind of how reported a story this morning about how kind of things dissolved between Phil Jackson and Jeannie Buss. And one of the things that she wrote about was that their kind of relationship was strained because they weren't allowed to talk about each other's jobs. Mm-hmm. Legally, they signed documents with the NBA, like against collusion, that they couldn't talk with each other about that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I think that almost puts as much of a strain on things as anything.
Right. And I meant it more from the standpoint of, like, I don't think Jim Buss's statements necessarily, you know, I don't think they, you know, set Phil Jackson off by any means. Again, after getting this update, I kind of thought to myself, okay, yeah, the Phil to LA stuff was never really a thing as a team president. And when Jim Buss goes out there and defends himself publicly, finally, and he, you know, goes out there and he talks about the deadline and puts it into some different context than it was in the first place, maybe Phil heard that and said, okay, fine, enough of this. I don't even want to deal with this anymore. And then, you know, he and Jeannie have the conversations that they had, and they led to the place that it went. I don't think it directly impacted that at all. But I do think this is probably a stay of execution for Jim Buss for quite some time.
I don't know that I'm willing to go that far, because I don't know that the only person she ever would have replaced him with would have been Phil Jackson. I don't know that he's totally safe at this point. I don't think that they should be moving on from Jim Buss as long as the team shows some progress this year, which they did initially. Then they've had some little setbacks, but I think even last night, that loss to the Utah Jazz was probably more hard fought than it should have been against a team, you know, seventh seed like the Jazz, that was expected to be better.
I don't think Jim Buss should. I'd like to see a couple more years of this rebuilding process before we get to a place where Jim Buss's job is legitimately on the line. Because what happens when a job is on the line is dumb trades happen to save a job, and therefore let's avoid that as much as we possibly can.
And what they've done so far, I mean, they've nailed a lot of stuff so far since they've been rebuilding. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think that this is the time to move on.
No. And so I would say, I don't know, the Phil Jeannie stuff, is as easy as it is to maybe think that it impacts everything surrounding both franchises. I do find it interesting that both parties, you know, chose profession over their relationship. I mean, that's kind of what it takes to be successful at the level of income that both parties are working at.
I saw a tweet about it from someone last night that said this puts a new definition, a new high on the phrase "ball is life."
Okay.
Which is accurate.
So. I guess so. I don't want to. I find it hard to analyze the ending of a relationship. Like, this whole conversation has felt awkward to me because we're analyzing what the end of a relationship, and probably one of the low points of both Phil and Jeannie's lives, especially at least romantically to this point. I don't feel great talking about what it might mean for the Lakers. So like when I was tweeting about it, or I wrote down and I deleted about five or six different tweets, and this is me, I send stupid tweets all the time. I wrote down and deleted multiple tweets that I thought, you know, okay, maybe this, whatever, but I decided to just stay away from it. And it's just because for right now, I think it's the entire organization is best served. It's just, let's just focus on what we have in front of us, and we'll deal with other stuff as they come to us.
Yeah. I think the biggest takeaway from it is that most likely the Phil to LA stuff is gone. So even if there is a change this summer, which I don't think is out of the question yet, or out of the realm of possibility, then I think that it would be someone outside of Phil Jackson, which honestly, you know, this is going to sound callous considering it's coming on the heels of a breakup, but it not being Phil Jackson is kind of good news for Lakers fans.
Mm-hmm. No, it really is. It really is, based on the job he's done out there in New York.
Yeah.
I do wonder something that just kind of popped into my head. I wonder if they would ever, you know, they would say, all right, Jim, you're stepping away from your job. We'll promote Mitch and we'll hire a new GM. You know, maybe we'll promote Jerry West into being the actual GM. And
you mean Ryan West?
Ryan West, yeah. Ryan, okay. Maybe we promote Ryan,
I was
going
to say, I don't think Jerry West is going to come back to work under Mitch Kupchak, but
I definitely that is probably not happening anytime soon. So,
yeah, but most like likely.
But that's where you have the perception of change without any actual change.
Yeah.
If any kind of change was to take place, it would be something like that. But I don't see them completely ditching the progress that they've made over the last few years. Because Like, I mean, there was talk last night. James was on the show last night, and he says that he likes where the Lakers are situated more than he likes where Boston is situated. Boston's a legitimate Eastern Conference contender this year, you know.
They can hang a nice little Eastern Conference champs banner, maybe, but probably not. No, maybe probably. Like Eastern Conference champ appearance.
Yeah, like do they hire? I mean, they hang stuff for
Final Four participant.
Yeah, yeah, lost to LeBron banner. So they have a few of those, I think. Now they yes. What I was going to say is that, you know, the Lakers have made plenty of progress to this point. Like you talked about earlier, they've nailed multiple draft picks. They nailed the Luke Walton hiring, it seems like, at this point. They're going in the right direction. So whether or not Phil was or was not in the picture, to me, no matter how that was going to play out, I never saw the point in moving on from the team that has put this progress together. And this news doesn't update anything, because if anything, it takes away a likely candidate from the situation.
Yeah, I think that's probably the biggest impact.
Yep. All right. So this was again, we were just trying to update everybody on what's going on. We had the big news about Phil and Jeannie happened during the game on Tuesday night while the Lakers and Jazz were playing. The demo stuff is something to definitely keep an eye on, because, again, the reasoning behind not signing him, to me, doesn't make much sense. And usually when the reasoning behind not signing somebody doesn't make much sense, eventually that player winds up signed. So, you know, it'd be one thing if they came out and they said, you know, honestly, we just don't feel comfortable with the back. You know, we don't feel comfortable with what we saw in the workout. It seemed to me that the Lakers were at least somewhat impressed by Demo.
Reportedly, he was impressive. Yeah. So that's, yeah, we'll see if it ends up meaning anything. I would say that the fact that he's not signed yet would kind of point me towards, I don't think that that's necessarily the direction they're going to go, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and the other thing too with the Lakers, they always do something kind of out of, like, whatever you're thinking, whatever the rumors about what the Lakers are doing might be, it's pretty rare that they go out and they wind up fulfilling those rumors. So whatever way that people have been reporting this story might end up, there's a really good chance it's not going to turn out that way. You know, there's a better than 50% chance, I would say, that the Lakers completely come out of left field again. I mean, even working out Monta Ioannis was something that I was surprised to find out about. So there you go.
Yeah, you always got to stay woke when it comes to the Lakers. You never know what they're going to do next.
Hugely woke. That does it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. I hope everybody enjoyed this. The Lakers play, by the time everybody is listening to this, on Thursday. Yes,
so tonight. This might go up Wednesday night. So they play Thursday night. Fine. Yep. I shouldn't have corrected you. Never mind.
So the Lakers play the Dallas Mavericks on Thursday night, a game that, you know, theoretically speaking, the Lakers should win it. I feel like they're a better team than the Dallas Mavericks.
If they can keep Harrison Barnes from roasting them alive again, then they'll be in good shape.
Is he still the top ISO scorer in the league?
I do not have that number off the top of my head.
He was for quite some time, which was pretty surprising. But yes, I think the Lakers should win Thursday night. Use that betdsi.com promo code Lakers10 to get $10 free to bet on that game. I feel pretty comfortable steering fans in that direction, and we'll see where that takes you. We will talk to everybody again on Friday, and I believe we have a pretty good guest lined up for Friday. So that'd be fun as well. Maybe I'll have Harrison there. We'll see.
I always live for that call, and then you usually let me down, but we'll see how it goes.
All right. We'll talk to everybody. We'll talk to everybody again tomorrow. Have a good one, and shouts to Vladimir Radmanovich.